Welcome to Ira's Everything Bagel, where I talk with intriguing people about everything, their passions, pursuits, and points of view. My guest today is Thomas Cullen. He's got a full-time job as a federal judge, but he's also author of Charlie Man. It's a coming-of-age story set in the American South. And the book is available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, bookshop.org, and all the usual places. And you can also find out about Charlie Man on Goodreads as well. Thomas, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Ira. It's great to be here.
Yeah, thank you for coming on. So tell us about why you decided to write, and it's a young fiction book genre as opposed to almost anything else you could have written. You could have written the 11th Amendment to the Constitution. You could have written, I don't know, a letter to me, but no, you decided to write fiction. So what was it in you that decided you wanted to write something that's set in a certain place, which we'll talk about, but also the fact that it's fiction? And you dealing with nonfiction all the time. Well, usually nonfiction, unless there's perjury, then it's fiction, but okay.
Well, that's a great question. So I'm a lawyer now, judge, and have been doing that for 20 years, but my first love has always been writing. I've been writing since I was a young man, high school, college, and even as a practicing lawyer, I often wrote op-eds and essays, mainly on political, current events, legal issues. And when I became a judge, I could no longer opine on current events and politics and those sorts of things. So I had to pivot and find some things that I could write about within ethical bounds. So I wrote some pieces for Cardinal News, which is the Virginia's largest nonprofit news site, on topics such as fly fishing in the winter in Highland County, which is one of my passions, and the joys of attending an all-boys summer camp. And after writing those two pieces in particular, I thought, you know, maybe you ought to give a shot or take a shot at writing a novel. Why a young adult novel? That was the story that I had in the back of my mind that had been percolating for some time. And that's kind of how it came about.
Were you surprised by the reaction to family and friends when this book came out? They know you a certain way. And putting the fly fishing aside, they didn't know that you had this novel in your hair, this fiction book. Were they, I don't want to say positive or negative, or were they more just amazed?
I think they were shocked and amazed. I other than my wife and my two teenage children, no one knew I was working on this for the first probably 6 to 9 months, long after I had completed a manuscript and had found a publisher. And the way that they learned about it, I gave a college commencement speech, and I just learned that it had been accepted for publication. So I had my introducer reference it in her remarks, and had a lot of family there, and you can imagine afterwards there was a little buzz about the book they didn't know about.
Well, the part that I'm shocked about is, how did you get your two teenage children not to spill the beans to anybody?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think they were still a little uncertain what's dad up to, and didn't want to broadcast it widely.
Very good. So you have to organize your life a certain way. Clearly you're on the bench, but you also have a family, and you also have other interests and hobbies, fly fishing, for example. So somehow you got to carve out time to write. I'm just curious about, and we're going to get into the book itself in a minute, but just to kind of give a sense of you as a human being to our audience, both viewers and listeners, when you had to carve out that time to write it, was it a set time each day? And I usually ask authors that question because I'm always fascinated by how they do it. Some do it totally different than others. What was your process or your technique for getting a full novel done? Because that's a lot of work.
It is. So when I set out to start, I set aside a couple of hours early in the morning before I got on the bench and had hearings, before the clerks came in, when it was quiet in my chambers. I utilized the same space that I typically use to do day-to-day work as a judge. And I just tried to write a little bit every day, whether it was 500 words, if I had a little more time, maybe 1,000 words. But the bottom line was, I wanted to move the story along and feel like I accomplished something in that regard every day. I worked a lot on the weekends when I had free time, when we had federal holidays and the like. And as I got into it, I think like a lot of authors, once I had a couple of chapters under my belt, the story just starts to flow and kind of takes the writer with it. And that was certainly my experience in this project. And I was able to write the first draft of the manuscript within about 3 months. Now, I spent probably 9 months to a year revising and editing the thing.
That's the real hard work.
That's the hard part, right? but first draft, getting the story down, took about 3 months, and it was, you know, just working on it a little bit every day.
Did you share the final draft with your wife and kids to get their feedback? And did they find things that you changed because you weren't thinking of one thing and they spotted it? Which happens pretty much with everybody who writes. You just, you know, you have blind spots. You can't always see something.
No, absolutely. So one of the neat things about the project, as I started to write, I would bring home hard copies of chapters and give them to my wife. And she would actually sit down in our living room. And it was wintertime. And I have a wood-burning fireplace, which I love. We'd build a fire. And she would read the chapters out loud with her pencil. And if something didn't ring true or she didn't like something, she would annotate and talk. We would talk about it. But we did that all the way through until I had the manuscript completed. And that was invaluable. Valuable input. My son was more interested in the project, I think for obvious reasons, because it's the protagonist is a teenage boy,
sure.
Although I think my daughter likes it. And he provided valuable feedback. They were the first two readers before it was accepted for publication. And I had a copy editor and I was going through the rigorous review process in-house.
Were you uncomfortable at all hearing when your wife read it out loud and making corrections? Were you a little trepidatious about what she might come across?
You know, a little bit initially, yeah. Like write the first couple of chapters. I mean, she knows that I love to write. As long as she's known me, that's something that I've always been interested in. But this was a different animal, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Her husband is trying to be a novelist, and so that was. I was very apprehensive going into that, and fortunately, she liked it, and the feedback was mainly positive, and she was extraordinarily helpful.
When you started to get the book into shape, and we're going to talk about what the book is about in just a second, but I want people to get a flavor of it. When the book was starting to get into shape, did you, when you probably have not only written it, but read it several times as well to see if you could catch things that needed to change, was there something that you discovered in it along the way, separate from your wife and kids, that or the editor, that you realize maybe months later reading it, you say, okay, I have to change this one aspect of it?
So no major structural changes, but yes, I mean, I probably read that manuscript 30 to 40 times over the course of 6 months, to the point where, you know, I had passages memorized and I was almost getting sick of reading it. One of the things about being a judge and a lawyer, having written so much, that you get used to editing your own work. And so I, every time I read a draft, I would find something to change. And it almost got to the point where you had to realize this has been through so many rounds and now so many people have had eyes on this. Before you make another change, you need to think about it pretty carefully.
That's very prudent, I think.
Yeah.
You can keep editing and rewriting until the book never comes out. So
that's right. That's
how right. Did you come up with the title Charlie Man? And then we're going to talk about how you approach the book, who the protagonist, the main protagonist is, etc. But how did you come up with this title Charlie Man?
It after thinking about and trying out different titles over a period of a couple of months, it just dawned on me one day. My nickname that my mother had for me as a child was T-Man, short for Thomas. And I just, for some reason, I thought of that one day and got it. That works. It's coming of age. The protagonist's name is Charlie. I think it's a fitting title.
There's a hyphen in there, though.
There is.
Yes.
T-Man, there was a hyphen.
Yeah, I was going to say it could work either way, but since you're right, you want to be consistent. So T-Man, Charlie Man, that makes perfect sense. So had you thought about coming up with a title that would be more dramatic in a sense? Some titles I've seen with some people I've had on the show where it's not just the title of the book, they have a subtitle, and the subtitle goes on for three pages practically off the cover of the book. It's so long. Have you ever thought about putting in a subtitle that would explain your approach to coming of age?
Yeah, honest answer is no, I didn't. The only other title, the kind of the runner-up, was Ambassador Rights, which is where the first chapter is set and where the book concludes, and it's where Charlie spends a lot of time during his formative years on the banks of the James River, trespassing with his best friend, Bo Miller. So that was the runner-up, but my wife never liked it, and we thought Charlie Man was a better title.
How important in the book is a sense of place, a sense of geography, not just geography, but, and when I say a sense of place, that's more than geography. It's a feeling, it's human connection, it's touchstones, it's all these things with place. So I'll use that term. How important was a sense of place in your novel?
So a sense of place was critical, as was a sense of time. So I wanted to write about a particular place that was real, Richmond, Virginia, this medium-sized, very southern town that has progressed a lot in the 35 years since I was a teenager. It's almost unrecognizable in some respects today as it was during that time, but it was a unique place. And within that city, there was this kind of smaller hamlet, the near West End, where I spent a lot of time, and in terms of the river, the houses, the architecture, the pool, the country club, the restaurants, many of which are still there. That was important to capture that because I had lived it. It's kind of seared on my brain. I can describe it. I can smell it, and I can see it as we're talking. So I wanted to capture that accurately, but I wanted to capture the time as well, right? The early to mid 1990s, a period where I spent my formative years. I call it kind of the pre-modern era before the advent of the internet and social media and cell phones. So it was a time when teenagers weren't wedded to their phones, had to use landline telephones, spent a lot of time just talking, in my case, in Charlie's case, on the banks of the James River, where news had to travel organically, right? And it took time for things that happened to you to be broadcast to the world. Mm-hmm. And technology and music, right? CDs and mixtapes and those sorts of things. So that was a lot of fun to reminisce and try to capture what it was like to be a teenager at that particular time in that particular place.
Did you find it was in a way, because it reflects your background and your upbringing, was it, I hate to use this overused term, but I'll ask it, was it cathartic writing this as a fictional novel? Fictional novels are redundant, but as a novel?
It was. It was not only cathartic to a certain extent, but it was just a lot of fun because it required me, for instance, in crafting dialogue, to think, how would I have said something as a retort? Smart-ass remark would I have made? What would my best friend have said under those circumstances? Going into it, the dialogue for someone with my background was the most daunting part. But as I got into it, I found it was the most enjoyable part. In other words, just put yourself back there in that situation with that person, and how would you have talked to him? And I just had so much fun doing that.
So you tapped your own memory. Did you also tap the memory of friends that you or relatives you've had from that period of time and ask them for contributions of certain words or phrases or just even memories?
I didn't, because the project was so closely held and so few people knew I was working on this.
You could have
just really relied on my own memory and then just creative license, fill in the gaps by making it up.
Yeah, you could have lied and said, well, I'm doing a research project. Do you remember how you were to say this with that kind of stuff? Did you find when you're writing the novel, was it, again, it's Charlie Man with a hyphen, so the as opposed to T-Man, which you're going to write another book, which is going to be your autobiography called T-Man.
There we go, right?
Yeah. So you'll come back on, we'll discuss it when that's written. But when you were focusing on the main protagonist, some of it must reflect your own upbringing and your own self. Did you also, though, take traits, characteristics from friends that you knew at the time?
Sure. So it's often said that first novels are at least partially autobiographical. And I think that's true to a certain extent. Charlie is kind of familiar in how he perceives the world in terms of, a healthy sense of cynicism, a wry sense of humor, perhaps being a little diffident, lacking self-confidence, thinking, others are better athletes and students, but at the same time, having a sense of his place in the world. I think that's vaguely familiar, or more than vaguely familiar to me. Some of the experiences in the book were, if I'm being completely honest, were inspired by certain things that I experienced as a young man. But Charlie certainly deals with a lot more adversity than I ever did as a teenager. I never lost a parent. I didn't have a parent who was suffering from a substance abuse problem, and my best friend didn't. Well, I don't want to spoil too much, but some of what Charlie goes through, I didn't personally experience. The other characters, I think folks who knew me and knew my friends at that time, they're going to be familiar to certain readers, but they're no dead ringers. I think most of the characters are composites, but they are certainly inspired by folks that I encountered along the way.
Did you find it hard to write character development within each person? And what I mean by that is you had a sense of place, you had a sense of time, and you had a sense of the protagonist, the main protagonist. You had other characters you had to write for. Did you have trouble initially coming up with the characteristics for all these other people to make the story move along?
That was a challenge. Certainly with respect to Charlie, his best friend, Bo, I going into it, I knew who those characters were and knew they were critical to the story. The other characters I developed as the story progressed, and the hardest part was determining which characters mattered in terms of development. So all told, there are probably half a dozen or eight characters who appear throughout the novel, who play integral roles in Charlie's story in the novel itself. So the harder part was kind of drawing the line as to, these characters, you've developed them, are they sufficiently developed versus these on the other side of the margin that are referenced, that appear, that help move the story along, but you don't do a deep dive into what they're thinking and they don't play major roles in the plot.
I don't know if your wife came from the same background that you did. Did she grow up with the same kind of background as you did, so she was able to recognize place and time?
So she is not from Richmond. She's from a small town in central Kentucky. But she spent enough time there with me over the years and has heard me talk about, has met some of these people, that she has a good sense of that particular place and why it's unique, like any place. To that extent, she had a sufficient background in Richmond. Certainly, she grew up at the same time period I did, not in that particular place. So she was grounded in that and was really helpful in helping me be consistent and as accurate as I could be.
And your kids, of course, are coming from a totally different time and place. So did they, when they read it, did they connect with what they were reading?
Interestingly, I think they did. So my son read it. He cried at the end, you know, and I'm just like, yes. So
pretty impressive.
It hit him. Right. So that was for me a really important feedback. As we were putting the finishing touches on the manuscript, we're still in pre-publication until next week. I shared advanced copies with a number of friends, including teenage sons of current friends, and a number of them have read it, and they've all been very positive about their reaction. And, you know, I can't believe Mr. Cullen wrote something like this, I guess in a good way.
Well, I'm more impressed that you were able to get their eyes off of screens and into a book.
Right. Well, it's only 210 pages, so
that helps.
I think it's a quick read.
Unless you gave them a digital copy, which made it easier for them to read. Do they know what a regular book is these days? I mean, that's
very few of them do. Although there's still some that are out there. I can think of one in particular, son of a good friend of mine, and more power to him.
When you write about the Southern school experience, and that, how unique is that from experience in other parts of the country, West Coast, East Coast, et cetera, even Midwest? Is it uniquely Southern?
So that's a great question. I obviously don't have personal experience attending, a boarding school in New England or a private school in Los Angeles, California. The school that I attended, the school that is in the novel, is certainly a Southern prep school, right? It's a school that is located within an insular world, right? Right in a neighborhood. By and large, at that time, it was attended by the sons of the establishment of that city. Mm-hmm. The teachers, mostly male, I think instilled and reinforced many of the values of the parents and folks who kind of came up in that particular city. So, in other words, masculinity is a big deal. Competitiveness, exceeding in the classroom and on the field, being at the top of things, but also being a good sport. So those are kind of vestiges of the Southern private school experience that I experienced personally. You know, at times it was akin to Lord of the Flies. I think those are kind of the unique hallmarks of the Southern prep school experience, at least from my experience at that time.
Sure. And in those days too, it was males only in the sense of attending those.
That's correct.
So, right. How did you survive that, all of that, and become a dignified federal judge in Virginia coming from that background? Because I know what you're saying. You see it one way, but you can also see it another way, and you can live it one way, and it's somewhat correct, but there's other elements that are, you know.
Sure. There's good and bad.
Right.
So, you know, in the moment, you don't appreciate it, it can be really difficult. I was never a star high school student. I wasn't a star athlete. I was sometimes bullied in middle school. It got better as time went on, and I ended up having some really deep friendships and doing well in classes that I cared about, and things worked out. But I think it teaches you resilience, and that's a theme of the novel that's really important. But you learn a lot of other things along the way. The teachers that I had, I think some of the teachers that are portrayed in the book play such a critical role in the development of these, in the case of the book, these young men, right? They have a vested interest in their well-being, trying to instill the right values, helping them reach their goals, and just this sense that they, you know, this that they care what happens to you, and to try to get you to a place where you can achieve your goals. You don't appreciate it at the time, but I can tell you this, that you know, I remember those teachers and coaches well. And I think it's fair to say that a lot of folks who attend schools like this, or even public schools today, mm-hmm. Will remember these teachers and coaches for the rest of their lives for good reason.
You mentioned resilience as one of the themes of the book and your own life, too. Are there other themes in the novel that people will get a sense of when they maybe even indirectly themes or values that are in the novel, Charlie?
Sure. So there are myriad internal conflicts that Charlie experiences, some of which manifest themselves into external conflicts that kind of blow up as the year progresses. And Charlie perseveres. He's resilient. But one of the important themes that I try to present, at least implicitly through the novel, and this may be different from the modern experience versus that particular time, but Charlie confides in and relies upon, to a certain extent, a trusted coach and guidance counselor named Toby Reeves to help him deal with some anxiety that he's dealing with that's pretty pervasive and severe. And he's willing to be vulnerable, and he's willing to confide in this guidance counselor about how he's feeling and how it's affected him. So that's important, I think, because what I'm trying to say through Charlie's experience is you can be resilient, you can have a stiff upper lip, but some of these issues are big deals, and you can't bear these burdens by yourself. And it's okay to share these things and to ask for help as you go through experiences like that.
Yeah, a lot of people don't know that they should, or don't think that they can ask for help when they can, even if it's maybe they can't ask for it at home, but they can ask for it elsewhere.
And that's right.
Whether it's a friend or another relative or school or whatever it happens to be. What do you want people to take away from reading Charlie Mann? I know there's various themes and various actions that go on, but if there was one thing that you thought you would like people to take, readers to take away from reading the book without giving away the whole story of the book, is there one thing?
I don't know that there's one thing. I want the readers, those of my era, to be transported, right, to a different place and a different time with interesting characters and relate through those experiences, through the unique aspects of life at that particular time, and follow along with an interesting story of a kid who's having a tough go in certain respects, but he perseveres, he's got a wry sense of humor, he has help along the way, and he leads a pretty interesting life. So I want him to recollect, to be inspired, to think fondly on that part of their lives, and for younger readers to get a sense of what it was like for someone like me or like Charlie 35 years ago being a teenager. Guess what? Life wasn't all that different, right? Those challenges that you all are facing, we face those same challenges. Perhaps we did that in a different way, but at the end result, with a lot of help, things turn out okay. So I hope, particularly for younger readers, they feel inspired and maybe have a more of an appreciation for some of their elders, for lack of a better term, and a shared experience.
That's a great way to leave it. My guest has been Thomas Cullen. He's author of Charlie Mann. It's a coming-of-age story set in the American South. The book is available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, bookshop.org, and all the usual places. And you can also find out about Charlie Mann on Goodreads. Thomas, thanks for being on the show.
Ira, it's my pleasure. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you. And join us every Thursday for a new schmear on Ira's Everything Bagel.